The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The speaker is Mark Nunberg, guiding teacher at Common Ground.
These kind of guided meditations are real concentration work. So we have 15 minutes before lunch and a little time to just talk together. So if there were any things in your small group that you shared, or any responses to the meditation or the talk, or any questions, I think it'd just be nice to hear from each other. We can both,
Why don't you use the mic, Abby?
Point it right at your mouth horizontally.
Okay. So something that was brought up in our group was this idea of like a framework, and kind of like building up, like especially when there's like a long history of like anger or resentment with particular situations, and building up this like framework so when any small thing happens, like referring back to that framework as kind of like the mode of reference. And so like we talked about trying to figure out ways to abolish that framework, and kind of, I know we had brought up kind of in the teachings, like starting new in each situation, as opposed to having to live with this like thing in your heart that has been built up for months or years, even decades for some, and how that's been kind of a struggle in all three of our situations. And yeah, trying to find methods to abolish the framework, basically. So.
Yeah, you know, we'll talk about this afternoon. So, like, when you're talking about framework, it sounds like you're talking about like traumas or kind of things that trigger, that little things will trigger because of this pattern or trauma or whatever. And just kind of, I'm just aware of your words, like demolish the framework, right? So it's like, and we'll talk about this afternoon, about, you know, how we deal with the things that afflict us, you know, and how we move in gently, and how the aim is to try to not to have the aim to fix, but to investigate. And that's really hard to kind of open in that way. But we'll talk about that in detail.
But it's not doing, you know, what Wynn said, it's not doing nothing to be curious about it. So that, we just have to remember that acknowledging the framework is a huge step. Because the problem is that it's not that there's a framework, but it goes unseen. So its influence continues because it's not being honestly acknowledged by the wisdom. So just knowing that there's a framework is a huge thing. And then learning to relax, because we all have frameworks, you know? And we're going to them over and over again, but we can be aware of that, which is huge.
Thank you. Yeah.
I, during our small group, recalled an image. Actually, it was a drawing I made a number of years ago, and it was called The Incredible Shrinking Mary. So my name is Mary. And I drew the image out of this idea that when I get really angry or feel really uncomfortable, I physically feel myself shrinking. And it's kind of a twofold thing, because I shrink because the anger is so uncomfortable. And I also felt that I would shrink because I've had this mistaken notion that if I acted on my anger, I would grow again. Like I somehow had to defend my shrinking self. And it's been very interesting doing this mindfulness practice to realize how much it hurts to shrink and how I further the hurt by acting on the anger. And that was a real powerful image for me, and it came up today, and this work is never done. Thanks.
I had an experience in the break that was just sort of woke me up, which was that as I went to the bathroom, I was washing my hands, and as I was washing my hands, the soap bottle just slipped and fell in the sink. And the mind immediately went, I forgive you, to the soap bottle. I forgive you to the sink for being so hard. I forgive you for whatever role I had, you know, that it was like this spontaneous, like, and just unfolding. And we've only been here for a few hours. And I thought, what really woke me up was, what am I repeating in my everyday life? I mean, if it took that little to color the mind, how am I coloring my own mind every single day in the everyday hours if it took that little to have that much of a change? What am I doing the rest of the time? Humbled.
So I was listening to a podcast by Joseph Goldstein, and he was talking about why self-doubt is so seductive. And he said something that really resonated with me, is that it masquerades as wisdom, as you're strong enough to be able to think about your traumas, you're strong enough to be able to face your inadequacies and so on. And this morning I realized, I think, that self-doubt has another quality, which I just realized. It actually, although I thought I was dealing with traumas by telling myself stories about them and how they, and why I may not be worthy, etc., but they actually acted, I think, now as a defense against really feeling the pain of those traumas. Because I was so involved in the stories I was telling myself about myself. And that shift really happened this morning, and it was kind of revelatory toward me.
I also shared this in the small group, but just something I've been realizing lately is that with a calmer mind, like when anger or ill will arises, with a calmer mind, I'm happy to just have some understanding about what happened. I can take comfort in that. But in the moment when that anger is really active, like, and I've seen this like even in the moment, which is an interesting experience. But it's like realizing that anger is only going to be satisfied by like having the thing that like triggered it completely undone or having never happened, which is impossible. Which is, that was an interesting thing to see in the moment, when it's just like, okay, like I pretty much like got like what I wanted, but I'm still angry because it happened and it means these things to me. Yeah.
I heard Jack Kornfield say something like, "For forgiveness is like letting go of a wish for a different past. You know, something like that.
Hi, I'm Holly. And one of the things I've had an awareness of for a while, but not really the skill to do anything about, is that I recognize that I use ill will as a protective device in lieu of a functioning boundary. By boundary, I mean in lieu of a knowledge about how to arrive, how to skillfully handle a situation. And so sort of mark the second reflection that you were talking about, that, you know, forgiveness doesn't mean that you forget that the world, that reality exists, that power politics exists, that people handle situations unskillfully. But I do know for me the challenge is that that ill will as a substitute for a functioning or skillful boundary has been my default setting for so long that the knowledge of that hasn't been enough for me to change that part of me, or at least not as frequently as I would like. So, you know, work in progress, but I just wanted to share that.
I was reminded when you said that, one of my teachers a long time ago said a point that we probably have all heard, but all of these strategies, as now with some wisdom and some hindsight, we see the limitations and maybe even the destructiveness of these patterns. But the point he made was the mind, you know, the conditioned these conditioned patterns of the mind, they're just trying to take care of whatever they imagine needs taking care of. But it sets in motion a lot of, you know, heaviness. And it's the same thing with ill will. Now with some wisdom, some forgiveness, some compassion, we can look at the deep habit of using ill will to manage our life, to protect ourselves. But we can also see that, I'm just trying to take care of myself. It's not very effective, doesn't really help. But we can see the underlying intention is to protect yourself, to be safe. And it's all we knew. And then, of course, now we know more, but now it's a big habit. So we continue to go to it, not because we actually think it works. It's just because before, it was the only thing we knew to do, even though it didn't work very well, it was the only thing we knew. So that's how we got power, or that's how we felt somewhat in control. Same thing with people who close down, you know? It's what we know. And we just, so we can have a lot of compassion as we get more clarity on these patterns that now, with some wisdom, some more space in the mind, we see, oh boy, it's not really helping. Thanks for sharing. Mm-hmm.
One more thing that came up for me, Mark, when you were listing ill will and resentment, what every time you said that, I was like, and don't forget self-pity, because that's my thing. Because I don't, resentment, ill will, I mean, I'm sure I have those too, but what comes up for me more often is self-pity and like, poor me, why me, you know, why did I get this life? And then I also question the relationship of, like, karma to all this. These are just the lessons that I need, this particular iteration of me needs to learn in this lifetime. And I have, you know, pretty much accepted that, but it's taken a long time. So I'm kind of interested in, you know, the understanding of karma in terms of forgiveness, if that can be related to each other.
Never thought about that. Sorry, has a whole book about the questions that are useful to ask and the questions that are not useful to ask. And why me, you know, and all the different iterations of why me, it's like there's an implication in that asking a question that way that doesn't actually line up with the way it is. And so even though things are lawful or causal or conditional, doesn't mean that that question, why me, why is this happening to me, this isn't fair to me, and trying to understand, like, well, why is it happening to me? It implies that the interpretation that this is happening to me is an accurate interpretation. What is more accurate, indisputable, is this heart feels this now. And we can just stay there. It's quite a stretch to go from there, like the heart's feeling this now, to this is happening to me, right? So we go back, well, what do I know? Well, I know there is this feeling. And I know that there's this not wanting to feel this feeling. So we just go to the elemental nature of what's happening, what's being known in the moment. And we start to have a useful, skillful suspicion of the questions the mind asks. And we can ask the question, is this a helpful question? Or does this question need to be answered? Or even as I'm holding this question, does it come with tension? Like some questions immediately put it, the mind, the heart, in a box. And like, well, not needing the answer to the question is immediately stepping out of that box. So one answer is, I don't need to be asking that question. So, maybe we'll end with Ginny, and then a few instructions about lunch.
I was just going to comment. When I really appreciate a simple thing you said, asking myself, is this leading me to more suffering or less suffering? And that was really powerful. Thank you.
Yeah, actually, that for me came from Bhikkhu Anileo, who is a wonderful scholar, and that became his principal teaching, those words. So, yeah.
So a couple thoughts about lunch today. So we'll come back about 1:30. We'll ring the bell about 5 minutes before. We'll gather for a guided meditation at 1:30 or a little bit later, but thereabouts. And people are strongly encouraged to stay in community. So if you didn't bring your lunch, go get it. But instead of eating it wherever you're getting it, bring it back. Join with the other people who went out and got a lunch. And, you know, just organically form groups of 3, 4, 5, 6 people. Eat in the community room, the lobby, the basement, outside. There are some gray blankets in the closet. Those are okay to put on the lawn. Just shake them out really well before bringing them back and putting them in the closet at the end. There are some lawn chairs out there. You can bring even some of the folding chairs from the basement outside. Just get a rag. Some people in the group know where the rags are kept down in the basement, and wipe the feet of the chairs off before you bring them back to the basement. And so in your groups, of course, anything that felt relevant, juicy, important from the discussions this morning. And then also you could look at reflection number 2 on your sheet. And so any one person who's in your pod could say, conversation's getting a little too much about the weather or this or that, so let me just read this out loud for the group and see if it takes us somewhere. So just let it be organic. You don't have to make the sharing tight or even, I mean, it's good just to have a radar for somebody whose voice hasn't been heard and invite that voice in. You could also do a pronoun check again. It's just a good habit in our community and more of our communities to just make that a good habit in social situations. Some of you might be sleep deprived, so feel free at some point, having participated in the group, to excuse yourself. You can come in here, take a nap, do a lying down meditation. If you fall asleep, the bell will ring and wake you up in time to get ready for the 1:30 sit. Any questions about lunch? There's a microwave down in the basement as well as one in the community room. Anything I'm forgetting about lunch? So stay on the lookout for people who don't have a small group. Consciously, intentionally invite them into the group so nobody's feeling left out. Great. Have a wonderful lunch, everyone.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.